Somebody take the keyboard from me. But you
Billy
know what?
Shear's up next.
Billy Shear's up next, and you on the other side. And so here is the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4 head on. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome aboard Foxed Up here for, what is it, Thursday night, Friday morning, Friday afternoon. Yeah, that's what it is here, isn't it? Wherever it is that you might be on this beautiful blue marble. And being that it's a Thursday night, we got a Billy Shears. And this one, parents, you know, if you're worried about kitty ears, rush the moth out of the room. I do believe this is the Liz Phair thing. This could be fun. She's kind of neat. And I can see why, I can just imagine why Mr. Billy Shears said so. Yes, Liz Phair. This could be fun. I don't know if this is, I guess, a one-off. So after having done, what, 5 weeks of Lennon on Lennon, we're back to more normal fare. But, yeah, this should be fun. So, you know, as normal, This comes from Mr. Billy Shears, Night Sounds Weekends here on the Head On Radio Network. And without further ado, Billy Shears on Liz Phair. Hit it, Bob.
This is the Head On Radio Network. The Horn.
Liz Phair is a singer-songwriter that has received significant critical acclaim for her blunt, honest lyrics and for the music itself. When she's not working on her own material, Phair makes guest appearances on other artists' tracks. In fact, she lent backing vocals to Sheryl Crow's hit Soak Up the Sun. But as mentioned, her lyrics can be very controversial, especially on this track titled HWC, which stands for Hot White Cum.
Had to be kicked off the Starbucks CD. They're going to sell it without that song, as well as Walmart, which is funny because, I mean, I can think of like Eminem's lyrics being much worse, really. But I think it's still in America shocking for a woman who is not saying, yeah, I'm completely anti-establishment. I run that line between good girl, bad girl, and it's just very difficult for people to deal with. I don't really care. Like, you want to take the song off? That's fine with me. I really don't care. It's more, to me, it makes going to buy the record, that'll make more kids actually buy two. You know what I mean? If they pick up the Starbucks one and then they find out there's a dirty song that's not on there, they're going to be like, well, actually, they'll probably download it, but too bad.
Another Liz Phair controversial lyric is from her track, Rock Me. It's about an affair with a younger man.
Do you want to know what's really funny? Is that, yeah, I was sort of writing about this guy that I was with. We hadn't actually had sex, and we never actually did. And then I went on a ski trip, and I did have a little affair with a, like, even more than 9 years younger guy. And so the song kind of became about him in my mind. This is before the record came out. But it still was kind of not a perfect fit. Now, after the record, I recently started seeing someone who is about 10 years younger than me. And it is exactly about that. So it, like, actually came true about a year after writing it. Like, the song grew until the reality fit the song. And that's what freaks me out the most.
Here, Phair talks about the song she wrote for her son, titled Little Digger. It's about her divorce.
Dig, little digger, don't be shy. You saw your mother with another guy. You think you'll tell her that she's one of a kind. You say, my. Can have. first wrote that, it took me 6 months maybe to be able to play it in front of anyone. And when I did, I kind of burst out crying, you know, right there in the studio, which is terribly embarrassing. And it's just, it's, but I'm also really happy that I wrote it, because when my son grows up, you know, he'll feel like I was aware of and had been thoughtful about what was so hard for him, because of course it was hard for him, for us to split up. Very, very hard. And he's going to have a scar from that, I'm sure. So it's nice that I could acknowledge that for him, I think.
Liz Phair talks about the impact her lyrics has on her friends and just what music in general means to her in her life.
Well, they're used to it by now because, you know, and I think it's reassuring too, because I really do lead a completely normal life. Like, I'm very much a normal person. So when I'm home, I'm just like, I absolutely take out the trash. And so they kind of see it as this little thing that Liz needs to do. You know, Liz just needs to say some dirty words, you know, every couple of years or so. So I think it's reassuring. All my friends, ever since I've been in this business, I've kept the same friends, basically. So my friends are my friends, and they know me, and they're just like, oh, Liz is doing that Liz Phair thing again. And plus, they're excited. It's fun to have a famous friend, you know? It's exciting. They're kind of wishing that I would come out with another record. Even the most conservative friends I have encourage me to, like, do... They're like, yeah, put it on the record. Go for it. Because they want to get backstage, and they want to be part of the whole... I have this trust that that's what I'm supposed to do, you know, that there's some kind of importance in being an artist, and it's not just, you know, to show off in front of people or to be a pop star or whatever. I really feel like there's a responsibility that an artist has, or at least a singer-songwriter, to kind of expose yourself. Because it helps other people. I really think it means something to them, because they get this weight lifted off them when they hear someone else feeling that way or describing a situation that maybe they can relate to. And that's what music is in your life. At least it is in mine. When I'm stuck on a record for a couple months, it's because it's helping me through something. It's helping me articulate what I'm going through. And that's sort of what I like to do with my music. So I think it's my job to open myself up.
Now here's one of Liz Phair's top 40 hits, Extraordinary.
Yeah. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Average, everyday, same psycho.
Thank you, Billy Shears. That was pretty cool. Seems like she's got a healthy outlook on what her music is, or what music is. Her, you know. Yeah. Kind of cool. Yeah, she's definitely had her moments of controversy. Don't mind that much. In fact, I kind of encourage it, but that's something else entirely. Don't forget Billy Shears, Saturday night, 9 to midnight Eastern time. And whoever played drums on that track, or, you know, I think there might have been a little bit of chop and play in there somewhere, but mostly kind of a live drum thing. I wonder who was playing on that. Just really in the pocket playing. Good. Always had a good band. That much I know. Anyway. Oh, the depression of doing Monsanto. And sorry about missing yesterday. Yesterday. Without giving out too much information, I walked into a meeting. And have you ever had one of those moments in life that seems like in 2 hours there was enough that a psychologist could write a thesis paper on human interaction? This was wild. And have you ever been in one of those situations where you're brought in late enough in the process of something and all sides involved after months realize that they have a problem and they need someone else to sort it out, and you're that person? Ooh. It was a strange place to be. But I survived to be here. And, you know, before that I was doing the whole Monsanto thing, and that stuff just gets me crazy. And, you know, if it wasn't bad enough, you know, we got this climate change thing, which seems to have fallen off the radar until bloody Bush comes out and comes up with a carbon scheme for the United States, which isn't even any reductions. It's just, it'll stop raising by 2025. So, by 2025, you'll start cutting back. Pardon me? Pardon me? You must be joking. And I'm not even going to go there yet, because, you know, you hear these things about, you know, the scientists don't agree. The scientists don't agree. And okay, 99% of scientists agree, 1% continuing to dwindle. Because as you watch most things as they come down, and it all says, you know, well, this, you know, one study can't be, you know, the last word. But as far as we're looking at, you know, this, that, or the other thing, yeah, climate change, carbon, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we've got another one. Gene sent me this not too long ago, just a few minutes ago. Jet streams are shifting and may alter paths of storms and hurricanes. Okay, not only do we have the problems of food production, you know, there's been excessive drought already. You know, we have the whole GM problem and cross-pollination and weird ownership fight over corn versus ethanol thing. You know, it's, we got that on the world food markets. Now, another sign that, you know, storms could increase, things could get a little more dicey and more of that we won't recognize this planet in 100 years. It says, the Earth's jet streams, the high-altitude bands of fast winds that strongly influence the paths of storms and other weather systems are shifting, possibly in response to global warming. Scientists at the Carnegie Institution determined that over a 23-year span from 1979 to 2001, the jet streams in both hemispheres have risen in altitude and shifted towards the poles. The jet streams in the northern hemisphere have also weakened. These changes fit the predictions of global warming models and have implications for the frequency and intensity of future storms, including hurricanes. Hello, hello? Including hurricanes. You know, Katrina wasn't the last one. This is going to happen again. And are we even really dealing in the real world when it comes to the United States on things like this? You know, this will end up, you know, affecting those, you know, huge trade currents as well, which is that whole thing. You know, that whole system stops. Well, then we're in a new ice age. Ick. Eek. let's see. There's another bit here. Sorry, I'm a bit disorganized today. Christina Archer and Ken Calderia or whatever, from the Carnegie Institution's Department of Global Ecology, tracked changes in the average position and strength of jet streams using records compiled by the European Center for Medium Range, blah, blah, blah. Jet streams twist and turn in a wide swath that change from the day to day. The poleward shift in their average location discovered by the researchers is small, about 19 kilometers. Or 12 miles. The jet streams are the driving factor of weather in half the globe, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, this is just more reinforcement that... And so Bush... Let's see if I got that. It's just like... What? You said what? Now, you know, you got to expect this from the guy who is the CEO of the, you know, oil industry junta that took over the United States in 2000 when it comes to stuff like this, from the green page at MSN. President Bush on Wednesday proposed a new target of stopping the growth of U.S. emissions tied to global warming by 2025. But environmental groups were quick to criticize, as they should be, the stand as merely undercutting stronger proposals in Congress and by several states. The president called developing new technologies the key to curbing greenhouse gas emissions over the long term, and added that the coal-fired power plants could do their part by slowing emissions growth a bit faster than 2025, which is obvious. That's just nothing. And we're seeing, and that this is just, you know, do nothing, blinders on, yada, 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 next subject, please, kind of treatment. And, he says here, to reach our 2025 goal, we'll need to more rapidly slow the growth of power sector greenhouse gas emissions so that they peak within 10 to 15 years and decline thereafter. We've actually had, we're hearing talk over here that the public is in favor of no more high-carbon electrical generation. That simple, at least for now. we've got the grid. We're pretty good. But from here, and I read or saw a commentator who I cannot remember, but I dug him for this. Australia has huge natural gas reserves. If the Australian government, and this goes back decades, the Australian government actually wanted to become truly independent from petrochemicals. They have reserves that they could very easily and still probably make a pretty good penny with some subsidies for certain sectors. Natural gas, like mandatory changeovers. They could just, like, you know, with the flick of switch, and then everything would have to be made for that. The car technology is fine. It's there. It just needs to be made more mandatory. And suddenly, you know, your energy security is a hell of a lot better. And you can do, and they're talking about solar and natural gas, as you can do baseload power if you just put the investment in. Just do it is basically what. There's like two systems out there with the solar thermal. Yay! And hearing more talk that once you actually decide that you're going to move forward with a target, real discussions have to happen on real aspects of things. And we're hearing more and more, you know, there are still people trying to tout the clean coal thing, but hearing a whole lot more discussion about the fact that, but no one can do it yet, so why are we, you know, yeah, we should still try and do it. I still don't see a problem. But it is the most polluting of the forms. So I think, I still reckon the carbon tax thing is the only way to do it. And, you know, you tax the polluters and you help the investors in the new stuff until you have enough of the new stuff that you're off of the other stuff, and then you're truly independent. I think that there's such an opportunity there. And they'd still have enough to trade on the market. But they could in a heartbeat make it possible. And to expand the infrastructure wouldn't be that difficult, you know. Not that hard. Every taxi, I think, in this town now all runs on natural gas. We have buses on that natural gas. Should just take it the whole bloody way. While you're doing the whole solar and geothermal thing out there in you know, for the other big stuff. It's going to have to happen. And you got this idiot. This isn't even a target. This isn't even a target. It's a joke. And he doesn't like the cap and trade approach and wants the markets. Yawn. The markets to have to do it all. When, you know, in most countries, it would not be right to think that, you know, the original railways were very much government-paid operations that helped an emerging, you know, private sector. Hello. And, you know, when every other day there's another, you know, report, paper or something that comes out that just kind of says, you know, we've been pumping too much crap into the system for just like far too long, far too quickly. You know, we need to pull it back. you know, gotta this now things aren't looking good. Little things that you can't really see with your eye are disappearing, and things that you can see with your eye are disappearing. And it's because of us. You know, we're the ones that have been making a mess of things, and things are dying. You know, I just don't. I just don't see how, at this point, you can still have people who can be so afraid of change and married in weird socio-economic ways to what do need to become in time scarce, dirty energies, or, you know, sources of energy. I mean, it's just, you know, there comes a time in, you know, we realize, oh, that's probably not the best way to do things. We got to do it different. Okay, let's put money in to make the stuff that makes it work. So, yeah. What's so hard about it? I mean, it's like stoner logic. You know, what don't you get here? You know, we've seen rice prices go up by like 80% in a few months. I mean, this is even here. Some of the, you know, they've actually been, you know, we've been talking about the food shortage stuff for months now, and suddenly it's popped up on the news here, and they're like, huh? Yeah, haven't you noticed? Haven't you noticed that, like, rice is suddenly becoming something exotic? you know, we have countries that are banning the export of their rice and wheat. Now, they talk about Australia being lucky that we're a food exporter, not an importer, so that isolates us in some special, quaint way. But, I mean, we're only 6 months into the first wet in like 7 years, and I wouldn't doubt if come out of this winter we go back right back into that El Nino pumped hot dry, and I could see bushfire season in this country next year being a nightmare, because all this water that we so desperately needed is going to create, and I've, you know, talked about that this effect would probably be the thing that really hurts this country, is there will be all this nice new growth to go dry, and it's like kindling just waiting to go off. And this place gets so hot when it goes hot that that becomes a pretty much, it's going to happen a couple of times. And you have the occasional just, and it still happens, idiot that, you know, fireman gone loopy. It's one of those sad situations, I think. You know, starting a fire so that they can be the hero kind of deal, and you just go, what? Are you kidding? You've got to be kidding. But no. It's all real. So, you know, As if we didn't need any more, you know. It's 99.4% of scientists agree that the Earth is going into a cycle of man-made or man-assisted global warming due to its output. And starting to hear more talk about these larger things that could end up flipping the switch into an ice age thing, because I kind of thought that got lost for a bit, but this is actually what ends up happening. It's odd, it's kind of creepy, it's bizarre, but a huge mass of the world's water stops moving, and then, you know, all of England and Europe, you know, get all kind of sucked up in ice, because it's the movement of that water that keeps it from going into ice lock every winter as it is, and it stalled a couple times in the last year. Hello. And hearing more and more, you know, and this is always a little bit depressing, but, you know, I'm hearing more and more commenters saying, you know, because of the American administration, we may have missed the opportunity to have actually done something to kind of really pull it back. But if we get on it now, we will limit the damage or dramatically slow it down after a bit, because it takes a while for these changes to actually have an effect down the line. You know, the carbon hangs for a couple of years. And who, you know, already seeing food panics. We got to look at that, you know. I mean, the way weather is moving and the way things that, you know, as creepy as I was talking about the other day with Monsanto, with this GM corn and GM soybeans that's just kind of like, you know, cross-pollinating with the, you know, heritage varieties of corn and soybeans and stuff, and, you know, we're getting Franken veggies, you know, in some instances, but you can't undo this kind of thing. And so we look at more shifting weather and petrol prices, you know, what the oil hit something like, what, 112 or better a barrel or something like that? And it's just going to continue getting higher. And so much of that oil used every day is to make food. To make food! Now, if you were going to go and, like, you know, look at an industry and say this is really vulnerable, you know, perhaps we should be having a look at it. You know, this makes us really, really in trouble if it's the case. And I kind of don't even want to think about it. It's just, I mean, widespread food shortages. You could then see, you know, poor people really at war. Who? I mean, these are the basic things. You know, this idea of privatizing food security is just, it makes me just want to scream. And you know, there's plenty of people fighting on the side to keep things easy for them, but you know what their products do to the rest of us, and we're not even given a choice anymore. How democratic is that? How do you justify that? How do you make that real in your mind? I don't know. Yikes. Big, big yikes. I don't really want to talk about the bloody war. That's just depressing. And I'm just so... I watch these clips of the bloody debate. I'm going to use this to fill in the rest of the show. It just... how unbelievably pathetic. You know, I probably, within all the clips that I watched, saw about a third of it, I guess. And... the questions from the public were just like, you know, grab me, you know, a rail spike so I can just drive it deep into my thigh. Or I'm gonna break something expensive. It's just... unbelievable. And like I'm kind of happy that what I keep reading is that, you know, this is ABC that did this thing, that they actually got like some 4,000, you know, comments and emails from people just going, what the hell was that? Who organized, directed that hideous piece of theater that was so unbelievably partisan arranged? It was a joke. It was a Republican talking point fest in all kinds of, you know, kind of, you know, isn't this uncomfortable? Or, you know, isn't this completely useless but a touchy subject, so you'll have to waste time walking treadly to get out of it? You know, walking carefully to get out of it. And you just... oh, please. You're killing me here. And here's a really weird thing. Okay. I guess I've been missing something, I guess. I somehow missed this, that our government here is, this might be the first thing that they're going to do that's going to make me mad. First thing that's going to piss me off. Supposedly, there's a huge problem with denial of service attacks against, you know, Australian company commercial intranets. You know, and intranets. So, Gene asked me about this earlier. So, the Australian government figured, nah, we're going to be tough on everything in the war on terrorism. Here's a little bit going back and playing the fear card. We're going to allow business owners to legally read workers' emails without notifying them and without cause. Now, I don't know about you. I don't know about you. Something's not right here. Reading emails and losing my stuff here.
have this sort of a plot for a science fiction book, which I haven't written yet, which is that things get so bad and polluted that everyone moves into geodesic domes, and inside the domes is really nice, you know. And this is a little song about how wonderful it's going to be living inside these big domes, you know. They've covered the city with plastic domes so the air inside could be clean. And it's really fine in our new home, we have everything we need. There are no planes, no buses or trains, and if you want to go somewhere, just think about where you'd like to be at, and before you know it, you're there. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be, yeah. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be. Now if you're hungry for food or drink, just go to the teller machine. Place your order, you just have to think and look at the video screen. But if you're lonesome and you think you would like to have a friendly chat, just talk to the teller machine and the teller machine will talk back. Hey, living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. Now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be, yeah. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be.
And with that, this Thursday evening edition of All Foxed Up will come to a close in light of the fact that John Fox's connection is apparently at present being gnawed by dingoes. Or something like that. So welcome to the weekend, John. And we'll catch you all for another broadcast day beginning tomorrow evening. Until then, well, remember, be good, be green. We'll see you on Monday.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I stuck my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, upstanding young man, I think you do. So I took off my hat, I said, imagine that, that's me working for you. Shot on sight. So I jumped on the fence and I yelled at the house, hey, what gives you the right to put up the fence to keep me out or to keep Mother Nature in? If God was here, he'd tell you to your face, man, you're some kind of sinner. Membership card to get inside. Ooh.
than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get dropped off.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.